We're doing Masechet Shabbat. We're going to learn a little bit about Chanukah. And the Gemaras about Chanukah really begin on Daf Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph in Shabbos. The Gemara is discussing in the second chapter called Damim Adlikin which wicks and which oils may be used for a lamp that is lit on Friday going into Shabbat. And what was customary is that people did everything by oil lamp. That was their form of light. And they didn't all have olive oil readily available or good wicks readily available. So the Mishnayot discuss that certain wicks and certain oils are not acceptable for use on Friday going into Shabbat, to leave those lamps lit on Shabbat, because when those wicks would start flickering, so then what people would do all the time is play around with the wick and the lamp, which is biblically prohibited on Shabbos. So Chazal said, anticipating what we would end up doing if they let us use those wicks and oils, Chazal said one may not use those wicks and oils on Shabbat, use them in a lamp that's going to remain lit going into Shabbat, because being that this is the way people lived, unwittingly people would inadvertently do biblical prohibition. They would play around with those wicks, and that's biblically prohibited. So our Gemara begins at the bottom of Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph, and we have a statement of Rav Huna. Amar Rav Huna, petilot ushmanim she'amiru chachamim en madlikin ben b'shabbat, the wicks and oils that our sages prohibited lighting with on Shabbat, en madlikin ben b'chanukah, one is also prohibited to use them for the Chanukah lamp, ben b'shabbat ben b'chol, be it on Shabbos, be it on a weekday, you're not allowed to use those wicks or oils. Now, the fact that he's telling us we're not allowed to use those wicks and oils, we understand that the reasoning is because the flame might go out, and he must hold that if the flame goes out, you have to relight it. So that's why he says on a weekday, I'm concerned, you're going to just disregard the Chanukah lamp. So you'll light it, and then if it goes out, you'll feel like, well, that's not my business. So that's why it says on a weekday, you cannot use those wicks and oils, because we're concerned that if it goes out, you won't take the time to relight it. And the reason you're not allowed to use it on Shabbat, we understand, is because he holds that you're allowed to derive benefit from the light of the Chanukah menorah. And if that is the case, then just like you can't light your regular lamp with these wicks and oils on Friday going into Shabbat, because we're saying if you're using that lamp, then you'll come to tilt it and play around with the wick, and for a second you'll forget it's Shabbat, but at the same token, the Chanukah candle, the Chanukah lamp. So that's what Rava says. Amar Rava, my time at the Ravuna. What's the reasoning behind Ravuna? Kasava, Ravuna holds, kaveta, if the candle, if the Chanukah lamp went out, zakukna, you're responsible to take care of it. You're responsible to relight it. Umutal lishtamesh lo'ora, and the reason he prohibits it on Chanukah of Shabbos is because that if it goes, because he holds you're permitted to use the light of the Chanukah lamp, and then if you use it, you might come to inadvertently fix it up when it starts flickering. So the fact that he prohibits it on a weekday and on Shabbos, Chanukah indicates that he holds these two things. That he holds you're responsible to relight a Chanukah lamp that goes out, and he holds that you're allowed to derive benefit from the light of the Chanukah lamp. Rav Chisda amar, and Rav Chisda holds differently than Rav Huna. Rav Chisda says, Madlikin ben b'chol aval lo b'shabbat. You're allowed to light the Chanukah lamps from these wicks and oils that flicker and that might go out on a weekday, but not on Shabbat. Why does he permit me to do it on a weekday? Kasavar, he holds kaveta in zakukla. If it goes out, you don't have to relight it. So that's why on a weekday, he allows me to use these wicks and oils, even though it might flicker and go out. I'm not worried about it. That's not your responsibility. Umutal lishtamesh lo'ora. And the reason he prohibits it on Shabbos Chanukah is because he says you're allowed to use the light of the Chanukah menorah, and that means that he might come to fix it, so that's why he prohibits it on Shabbos Chanukah. Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rav Matna. Rav Zera quoted Rav Matna, Varmila Amar Rav Zera, Amar Rav. And others say he quoted Rav. Petilot ushmanim shamechu chachamim en madlikin ben b'shabbat. The wicks and oils that Chazal prohibited using on Shabbos, madlikin ben b'chanukah, one may use them to light on Chanukah, ben b'chol ben b'shabbat. Regardless if it's a weekday or Shabbos, you're allowed to use those wicks and oil. Amar Rav Yirmiya, my time of the Rav. So Rav Yirmiya says, what's the reasoning behind this ruling of Rav? Kasavar, Rav holds, kavita in zakukla. If the Chanukah menorah went out, you don't have to worry about it. That's why on a weekday I let you use oils that are not as good for lighting, and I let you use wicks that might flicker and go out, because you don't have to worry about it if it goes out. You set it up to light. If ordinarily it would light, so that's fine. So that's why on a weekday I let you use these oils and wicks. And he also holds v'asul ishtamesh lora, that you're not allowed to use the light of the Chanukah menorah, and that's why he holds that you're allowed to use these oils and wicks even on Shabbos Chanukah, because we know that you won't use the light of the Chanukah menorah, so even if it flickers, you won't come to tilt it because you're not using it. So that's why you're allowed to use these wicks and oils on a weekday or on Shabbos Chanukah. Now we all know that Shabbos Chanukah, we light the Chanukah menorah before candle lighting on Friday. And then Matzei Shabbos, we light it after Avdalah. We're talking about the menorah that's going to be lit going into Friday night. You light it on Friday before you go to Shul for Mincha, before you do candle lighting on Friday. And those lamps are going to remain lit going into Friday night. And the question is, am I allowed to use that light or not? So Rav holds, you're not allowed to. And that's going to be the halacha, like Rav, that if your Chanukah menorah goes out, you don't have to worry about it, provided you lit it in a place that ordinarily it would stay lit. So if it happens to have gone out, that's not your problem. And we also hold that you're not allowed to use the light of the Chanukah menorah. Amro Rabbanan kameda Abaye mishmed Rav Yirmiya. The rabbi said this reasoning in front of Abaye in the name of Rav Yirmiya, v'lo kibla, and Abaye didn't buy it. He didn't accept the reasoning. Kiata Ravin, when Rabbi Yavin came from Israel to Babylon, Amru Rabbanan kameda Abaye mishmed Rav Yochanan. Then Ravin quoted from the great rabbi of Israel, Rav Yochanan. You remember this past Friday we learned that Rav Yochanan is the one that composed the Jerusalem Talmud. Rav Yochanan was an orphan from the moment he was born. When his mother got pregnant, his father died, and that childbirth his mother died. Rav Yochanan lived his whole life as an orphan, but he became a great, great rabbi in Israel. So Rav Yochanan, who composed the Jerusalem Talmud, we have many quotes. When rabbis came from Israel to Babylon, they quoted him. So one of the things that was quoted was this logic, that the reasoning behind Rav is that one is permitted to light with these oils and these wicks, because if it goes out, you're not responsible for it, and you're prohibited from using it on Shabbos. So when he heard it in the name of Rav Yochanan v'kibila, then Abaye bought into that reasoning. He said, fine, I accept it. If Rav Yochanan said it, fine. Amar, Abaye said, izakai, if only I would have merited, gemilte l'shmaite meikara. I would have gotten that tradition, this reasoning, originally when the rabbis quoted it to me. So the Gemara says, v'ha gamra, but ultimately he did accept that tradition. Why is he concerned that he only accepted it 10 years later? So he would have accepted it when he was a little bit younger. What's the difference? Why is he regretful that he didn't buy into it then? The Gemara says, Nafkamina legilsa di yankuta. The difference is, did he learn it when he was younger or older? When you learn something when you're younger, it stays with you for much, much longer. And here I have on tradition from my rabbis, and I saw it myself, that there's a difference between what you learn when you're 18 and what you learn when you're 20. There's a difference between what you learn when you're 20 and what you learn when you're 22. 22 and 25. 25 and 30. 30 and 35. 35 and 40. As you age, your memory changes. And our capacity to remember changes. So whatever you can cover when you're younger, what? For the worse. For the worse. Whatever you catch when you're younger stays with you much, much longer. So Abaye says, when the rabbis first quoted it, when the rabbis first quoted it, if I would have bought into it, then it would have been much better, because I was younger when I heard it then. And now, even though I am remembering it, but it's not as good. So this is an important concept, because we think that it makes a difference on big things, learning Shas. Abaye said it about this simple statement, two halachos. The reasoning behind these two halachos. He knew the halachos. The question is, was the reasoning this reasoning or that reasoning? You think, fine, I've learned it, I remember it, I know it, what's the big deal? We see how much effort they put into remembering even simple things. The Gemara says a simple halacha. If you read the Megillah by night, you still have a mitzvah to reread the Megillah on Purim by day. So the Gemara quotes that one of the Amram heard this and he said, oh, now I have to remember it. So he stood in place and reviewed it 40 times. If I heard it and I'd want to remember it, I'd think for a second and I'd say, okay, let's remember this. If you read Megillah by night, you have to read it by day. And then I'd go on with my life. And chances are, I wouldn't remember it for life. He stood in place and reviewed it 40 times, a simple halacha. So when we read the Amoraim and the Tanaim, we have to know how much effort they put into remembering every point in halacha. And this is a good example of that. The Gemara questions, v'kaveta in zakukla, and if it goes out, we're not responsible to go back and relight it. V'reminu, I'll throw at you a contradiction. The Braisa says, mitzvata, the mitzvah of the menorah of Hanukkah is, mishetishka chama, from the time the sun sets, ad shetichle regel min ashuk, till there ceases to be footsteps going through the marketplace. My love, so the Gemara says, what you think is, the ikavta hadal madlikla, that when the Gemara, when that Braisa says the mitzvah is from sunset till there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace, it means all that time it has to remain lit, and if it went out, relight it. That's what you think it means? No, that's not what it means. The Braisa meant to tell us the ilo adlik, that if you haven't let lit madlik, then at that time you should light your Hanukkah candles. That's one possible understanding, that one has the potential to light his Hanukkah lamp, his menorah, up until this point, till there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace. The inami or else, the logic behind this amount of time is l'shiura, how much oil you have to put in, how long should it have potential to light? What's the minimum amount of time that you have to give it potential to remain lit? So these are two possible understandings. When we say that the Hanukkah menorah is from the time of sunset till there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace, is this how long can you still light it for? When can you begin? You can pull it out of the wall. Or does it mean how much oil do you have to put in the menorah? You guys with me? Mm-hmm. Not so much. Okay. The Braisa had said that the mitzvah of the Hanukkah candle, the Hanukkah menorah, is from the time of sunset till there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace, which we know today means about a half an hour. Okay. So the Gemara is going to discuss it in a minute. So the Gemara says that doesn't mean that you have to ensure it's lit all of that time, that if it went out you have to relight it. No, if it went out you don't have to worry about it. What that means is that if you haven't yet lit throughout all of that period of time, you could still light. From sunset till a half hour after sunset. That's one possible understanding. The other possible understanding in the Braisa is, how much oil do you have to put in enough that it should remain lit that amount of time? If it goes out, that's not your problem, but you have to give it the potential to light that amount of time. There has to be a reasonable, it has to be set up in a reasonable way that it can light that amount of time, a half hour. That's what we say. The minimum amount that you leave, the minimum amount of oil is so that it should light a half hour. Now, we just saw that one understanding is, at what point can you light the menorah? From sunset. So that leads us to a difficult question. What do we do on Friday? You can't light at sunset. Sunset is Shabbos, so you have to light earlier. And from that question, we will infer how much earlier can one light on any weekday. Because if you can light on that time in that time on Friday, then you could also light in that time during the week. That's one possible understanding. Secondly, when we say this is the amount of oil you have to put in, so we're going to have to define that. What does that mean? Meaning if I light earlier, do I still have to put in a half hour's worth of oil? Or does there have to be enough oil to light into that time a half hour? You follow that Question? Meaning, does it have to be lit during that period, a half hour? Does it have to have the potential to be lit from Shkia till there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace, which is about a half hour after Shkia? Does it have to be have the potential to be lit then a half hour? So then, if I light before candle lighting, if I light 20 minutes before Shkia, I have to put in enough oil for 50 minutes? Or does it mean it has to be lit for a half hour? So that's question number two. And question number three is, when are we supposed to daven Ma'ariv? Do I daven Ma'ariv before I light candles? And in that case, by the time I get back home and I light my Hanukkah menorah, it's going to be way after the half hour. Or do I light the menorah and then go daven Ma'ariv? Okay. We're continuing the Gemara. We had said, Ad shetichle regel min ha-shuk, that the Hanukkah menorah must be lit until there ceases to be footsteps in the marketplace. That comma, to what degree? Amar Rabba bar Bachana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Rabba bar Bachana quoted Rabbi Yochanan, Ad dekal yarigla de Talmudai, till there ceases to be the footsteps of these people called the Talmudai. Who are the Talmudai? So here there's a difficult Rashi. Rashi says, Shem Uma, it's the name of a nation that gathers wood, and they stick around the marketplace after dark because people come back home, they light their fireplaces, they light their ovens, and suddenly they realize they need more wood. So these people would stick around the marketplace to sell you twigs and logs for your fireplace. So long as they're still around, that's okay. Now, the question is, why? What do I care if they're still around? Is the idea that my Pirsume Nisa is for them? I want them to see me light the menorah? Or is the idea that the people who come out to buy from them will see my menorah? Why is that something that interests me, that they're still around? Or do I just say, no, that's an indication what time? It has nothing to do with the mitzvah of lighting the menorah, it's just a measurement of time. Chazal want to give you a measurement of time. They said that, but it has nothing to do with who's seeing your menorah. Okay, so we're asking questions. You guys never learned Gemara with me. I believe when you learn Gemara, first you ask a million questions. Okay. You raise all the questions, and then when you start learning the Rishonim and the Halacha, you suddenly see how they answered up all these questions. But first we have to notice in the Gemara, what are the switch points? Because this is going to be a source of discussion. Is there a concept of Pirsume Nisa for a Goy, or is there only a concept of Pirsume Nisa for a Yid? Is the concept of Pirsume Nisa for people who are out there permanently, or people who are just going out to buy wood? Etc. This is going to be a source of big discussion. So in order to first be prepared for this discussion, we have to notice what are the questions in the Gemara. So that's what we're doing now.
So Ad shetichle regel min ha-shuk, I mean, if you're speaking about Shabbat, at least the Jews, right? I guess if you're only trying to make Pirsume Nisa for the Jews, doesn't it not really, like, what's, if it's Shabbat anyway, what is the importance of Ad shetichle regel min ha-shuk? Because after Shkia, you're not going to be fighting Jews in the Shuk anyway.
Oh, you're saying, so on Friday night, who's going out? No one's going out to buy firewood.
That's what I'm saying, because I'm not sure what's like the point of that measurement if it's on Shabbat.
So a good question. So I thought you'd ask the other way. On Friday night, everyone's going out to shul,
right?
And then they get back much later.
Uh-huh.
So maybe it would be, maybe your persimony says later, I don't know.
Right, it's not even the Amat Midah, it doesn't like make sense for being after Shkia on Yom Shishi, because nobody's on the Shuk from the Jews on Yom Shishi anyway.
I hear. So you're saying on a Friday, what would we say? Okay, let's keep that in mind and let's see.
Or you're saying that's just like a term. Ad shetichle regel min ha-shuk, it's like a term that means 30 seconds after Shkia.
30 minutes.
Like 30 minutes after Shkia, like B'derech Klal.
Potentially. We're leaving it open. We mentioned a few understandings, so
is this a munach that's like used in other places? Like a
no,
standard,
it's not munach. It's only here. I don't know of anywhere else that's used. Tanor Rabbanan. We have a Tanai quote that was validated. This is a brisa that came out from a Beis Medrash that verified it's a good brisa. Mitzvat Chanukah, the mitzvah of Chanukah, ner, an oil lamp, ish, a man, ubeito, in his home. So the mitzvah of Hanukkah is that each person in his home has an oil lamp. That oil lamp is the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Hanukkah. The ha-mehadrin. What does the word mehadrin mean?
The really, really kosher people.
So the word mehadrin has two potential meanings. Mm-hmm. In Loshon HaKodesh, in Hebrew, So it says v'hadarto p'nei zaken. You should glorify the face of an elder. So the word mehadrin could be those that glorify, if its root is in Hebrew. But Rashi seems to learn that the word mehadrin is in Aramaic. And then Rashi says, Veha mehadrin, let's see Rashi. Veha mehadrin achar mitzvot. Mehadrin could, in Aramaic means mechazrin. Those that chase after. Lehader means to go after. So ha-mehadrin, those that go after mitzvot, what do they do? Says the Gemara. Ner lekol echad ve'echad. Each person has their own oil lamp. Every person in the house has one oil lamp that they light, and that's their fulfillment of the mitzvah of Chanukah. Ve'ha-mehadrin min ha-mehadrin. And those that are chasers among chasers, Bet Shammai Omrim, the house of Shammai, the academy of Shammai, they say, Yom Rishon, on the first day of Chanukah, Madlik Shmona, he lights 8 candles, 8 lamps. Mikan Ve'ilach, from there onward, Pochet Ve'olech, every day he diminishes the number of lamps that he's lighting by 1. So on the first day he lights 8, and then 7, and 6, and 5, etc. Ubet Hillel Omrim, in the academy of Hillel, they say, Yom Rishon, on the first day of Chanukah, Madlik Achat, you light 1 oil lamp. Mikan Ve'ilach Mosif Ve'olech, from here onward, every day he adds an oil lamp. So, on the first day of Hanukkah, we light 1, second day we light 2, third day we light 3. Amar Ula tells us, Ula, Pligi Batre Amorai B'marava, 2 Amorim on the west, in Israel. They had an argument, Rav Yossi Baravn and Rav Yossi Bar Zvida. The 2 Amorim were Rav Yossi Baravn and Rav Yossi Bar Zvida, and we have the quote from them, but we're not sure who said what. We know that these two were explaining the reasoning of Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, but we don't know who said what. Hadama, one of them said, Tama de Beit Shammai. The reasoning of Beis Shammai is Keneged Yamim HaNichnasim, corresponding to the days that are still entering. So on the first day you have 8 days left. There are still 8 days coming in, so you light 8. The time of the Beit Hillel, the reasoning of Beis Hillel is Keneged Yamim HaYotzim, corresponding to the days that are still going to leave. So today is day number 1 that just is going out. Tomorrow is 2 days that have passed. How many days have passed? So the first reasoning says it corresponds to the days. If it corresponds to the days, then what would we say? Mehadrin min ha-mehadrin, those who do the most. Let's go back to the Braisa, right? The Braisa said 3 levels. It said, on Hanukkah, you light 1 lamp for the whole family. And if you want to chase after mitzvot, you light 1 for each person in the house. And if you want to be a big chaser of mitzvot, then you light the first day, according to Beis Hillel, you light 1, the second day 2, the third day 3. Now, the question is, what happens if I have 10 people in the house? So we said level number 1 is I light 1 for the whole family. Level number 2 is I light 1 for each person in the house, which means on the first night of Hanukkah, I light 10 candles. Second night of Hanukkah, I light 10 candles. Third night of Hanukkah, I light 10 candles. Because I'm always lighting 1 for each person in the house. The third level is what? The third level is you do corresponding to the days. Day number 1 you light 1, day number 2 you light 2, day number 3 you light 3. Now, according to the third level, do I do on day number 1, 1? Or do I say, wait, the second level was you do 1 for each person in the house. So on day number 1, light 10. And on day number 2, light 20. Meaning, when I say level number 3 means I correspond to the dates, does that mean I build on level number 2? If level number 2 was that you do corresponding to the people in the house, so level number 3 is the people of the house plus corresponding to the days? Or do I say no? Level number 2 is corresponding to the people of the house. You want to do even better than that, correspond to the days. So sometimes you'll win by going level number 3, because if you have 10 people in the house, you'll end up lighting much less candles. And sometimes you'll lose, because if you have 2 people in the house, otherwise you'd be lighting 2, 2, 2, 2, 2, and like this you're going to be lighting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So but that's the understanding of level number 3. So the first opinion says that it has to correspond to the days. If it corresponds to the days, then that means that level number 3 is not 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, but rather 1, 2, 3, meaning I don't care how many people are in the house, I have to correspond to the days. That's the third level according to Beis Hillel. Mm-hmm. So the first understanding in the Braisa says, the first day you light one, second day you light two, third day you light three. It has nothing to do with how many people are in the house. And that's the best you can do. You can't do better than that. That's the first understanding in the Braisa. That level number three has nothing to do with level number two. You guys follow? Mm-hmm. Level number two was you correspond to the members of the house. Level number three says, I don't care how many people are in the house. It has to correspond to the days. Mm-hmm. Okay? The Chad Amar and the other Amora says, Tama de Beit Shammai, the reasoning of Beit Shammai is, Keneged, the lighting of the candles correspond to Pareachag, the cows that were sacrificed on Sukkot. So on Sukkot, we diminish the numbers every day. And the first day we brought X, the next day we brought X minus 1, the next day we brought X minus 2. And time of the Bet Hillel, the reasoning of Bet Hillel is the Malin Bakodesh Ben Moridin. When it comes to holy things, we have two halachos. One is you always got to do more, and two is you can never do less. We say you always got to move upward, and two, you can never go downward. Two separate halachot. So now, this reasoning says on day number one, you light 10 if you have 10 people in the house. Day number two, you light 20. This reasoning says it has nothing to do with the days. This reasoning says it has to do with, you have to correspond to the people of the house, plus the days that are in and out, because you always got to move upward in life. So the first day you like 10, the next day you like 20. You guys with me? Okay.
Is that each person lighting their own menorah, though?
Oh, so that's a good question. Who lights it?
If meaning, somebody's lighting, at the last day, 80 candles, it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like, because like, must be the electric bulb.
Wait a second, I don't understand. How many people do you have in your family?
Well, now in my house, me and my father.
Okay, but when you were kids? When
me
you were
and my father and my brother.
Okay, but if you have a family of 8 kids, you have 8 boys, but so you, and your father, that's 9.
Around, lighting every single one.
So that's what that opinion would hold, yeah. There are multiple opinions here as to how it works. We Ashkenazim, we try to fulfill both opinions. The father lights his own menorah, and we light each of our menorahs, but separately, so that it's distinctly separate. It's not like we light 70 candles on we don't light 10 candles on the first night. We light, the father lights one, and each child lights one, so it's distinctly separate.
The Sephardim only do one then.
The Sephardim?
Only the father lights one candle per the household
right.
on the first night.
Correct.
So they're not being the usual Sephardi way and being not overly machmer, but more machmer.
They hold that's the correct understanding in the Braisa. That's how the Shulchan Aruch holds. Okay. Amar Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan says, remember Rav Yochanan is the rabbi of Israel. Okay. Shnei Zkenim Ayu B'Tzidon. There were two elders in the northern city of Tzidon. Echad Asake Bet Shammai. One would do like Beis Shammai, v'echad asakib divrei Beit Hillel, and one did like the words of Beis Hillel. Ze noten tam nidvarav. This one gave reasoning for what he did, keneged parecha, corresponding to the cows offered on Sukkot. V'ze noten tam nidvarav, and the other one gave reasoning for his actions, the marin bakodesh ben moridin, that you always have to move up in holiness. Notice which opinion seems to be supported bottom line in the Gemara? The opinion that says 10, 20, 30, 40. Right? Because we're supporting that it doesn't correspond necessarily to the days, but rather you always have to move your way up. Okay? Tanor Rabbanan. We have a Tanai quote. Ner Chanukah. The lamp of Chanukah. Notice that the word ner means an oil lamp. Mitzvah la'anicha al petach beito mi bachutz. There's a mitzvah to place it on the entrance to his home outside. Let's read that again. Ner Chanukah, the lamp of Chanukah, mitzvah. It is a mitzvah. Le'anicha al petach beito, to place it on the entrance to his home, mibachutz, outside. Im hayadar ba'aliyah, if he's living in an upper floor, manicha bechalon hasmucha l'rshut harabim, he places it in the window that is near public domain. U'bishat ha'sakana, and at a time of danger, that the pagans make a decree you're not allowed to light a lamp outside their house of worship. So if you're going to light your oil lamp and place it where everyone could see it, they could come with their Gestapo and do who knows what. So what are you supposed to do? Manichal shulchano, you leave the lamp on your table, you put it down on your table, vidayo, and that's enough. So this is the Tanai quote. Amar Rava, Rava says, if you're going to put the Chanukah menorah on your table, tzarich ner acheret lishtamesh l'ora, you need another lamp to use its light. You need light in your house at night. So if all you're going to have on your table is the Chanukah menorah, no one's going to recognize that that's for the Chanukah. It'll seem like you're just doing it because you want light. So you need another lamp to use its light. V'i'ika medura, but if you have a fireplace, lo tzarich, then you don't need another lamp because you have the light from the fireplace. V'adam chashuvu, but if he's an important person, that whenever he sits down to study, he turns on his own private lamp. So if you're going to sit down and you're going to sit next to the Chanukah menorah, even though the fireplace is on, it looks like you lit that menorah for your own use. Afal gavdika medura, even though there is a fireplace burning, tzarich ner acheret, you need another lamp, because no one's going to be able to recognize that you lit the menorah for Hanukkah.
At this time, was the Shamash instituted yet? Or?
No, right now not. This is the concept of a Shamash. What's this concept of another lamp? That's the Shamash. You have another lamp so that you're, to clarify that you're using the menorah for, you're not using the menorah for your own light. Okay. So here we have Machloket, Rashi and Tosfot, what's going on here? And not sure if we should go into it. Okay, let's try to do it quickly. And if we understand, good. If not, then maybe we'll move forward. Do you guys mind if I lower this?
I can turn it off.
I'm trying.
Okay.
Yeah. Everybody's cold.
Okay. No, it's on terms. That's okay. Okay. Let's get a picture of how they had their domain set up. This will help us for Erevin, this will help us for Shabbos, and this will help us to understand the Machlokas Rashi Tosus over here. There was public domain, which was, let's say, the marketplace, where you had about 2 million people a day. So you understand, you didn't live directly on this Broadway or Fifth Avenue or whatever it is. Most people didn't live there. And then there were alleyways called Mavui, that broke off from the Rishut HaRabim. So you had, let's say, this main alleyway, and then you had these alleyways coming down out of, going perpendicular to the public domain. So far, are you with me? Okay. Now, you'd go down an alleyway, some would connect you to another Rishut HaRabim, to another public domain, and some would be dead ends. So if it connects you to another Rishut HaRabim, that's called a Mavui Mefulash, an alleyway that's open on both ends. If it's a dead end, that's called Mavui Satum, an alleyway that's a dead end. Now, every alleyway that you went down would have a courtyard, a few courtyards going around the alleyway. And each courtyard, you'd enter the courtyard, and all around the courtyard, you'd have houses. You guys with me? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. So the alleyway is called the Mavui. The courtyard is called the Chatzer. And around the Chatzer, you had Batim. So the different Batim, the houses, all shared the Chatzer. So let's say you had 5 houses around the Chatzer, and then they'd all have a gate in front of their Chatzer, so they couldn't just enter their courtyard. They had a gate with a lock. You couldn't just enter their courtyard. And then they'd all share the Mavui. So the different Chatzerot would share the Mavui. Now, our Gemara said like this. The mitzvah is to place the Chanukah candle outside your home. Where does it mean outside your home? So Rashi says it means outside your home. Who's going to see it? Not Rishus HaRabim. Who's going to see it? All the people of the chatzer. Is anyone else going to see it? No. Because you have a gate in front and no one else sees it. The next step is, if you don't have a place in your home, so you place it inside, opposite a window that's near Rishus HaRabim, provided you have one. So you've changed the populace that's going to see your menorah. When you were on the bottom floor, so everyone knew if you put it at the door to the house, it's your menorah, good. When you're on the top floor, if you put it next to the door, everyone thinks it's the landlord's, it's the bottom floor, it's his menorah. So then we say put it by the window, so people from the public domain will be able to see it. But you've changed your audience. Meaning when you're on the bottom floor, you leave it outside your door, so your audience is the people in the chatzel, the people in the courtyard. They all see it and they all know it's yours because it's near your door. When you're on the top floor, if you put it near the door on the bottom floor, everyone thinks it's his. So you have to do your persume nisa. So you have to light your menorah by the window of the top floor. That's how Rashi holds. So you understand, according to Rashi, there's a little bit of difficulty in the Gemara because you're changing your audience. On the other hand, what Rashi says fits into the words very well because it says you place it by the entrance to your home. That's what the entrance to the home means. So who's going to see it? The people of the chatzel, the people who share the courtyard with you. But no one else is going to see it. Tosa says, our Gemara is talking about a unique situation. Our Gemara is talking about the classical house that has a chatzel, that has neighbors. Our Gemara is talking about a house that's on the public domain. You live on Broadway. Your house opens up to Broadway, to the main street. So then, when you put it at the entrance to your house, you're doing persume nisa to public domain. Says Tosus, what would be the din in a situation like Rashi's if you lived inside a courtyard? So Tosus says, then it's not good enough that you put it at the entrance to your house. Who's going to see it? Only the people in the chatzel. You have to put it outside the courtyard. Meaning, according to Tosus, all the members of the chatzer would have to put their menorah outside, at the entrance to the courtyard, but not at the entrance to their homes. The only time the Gemara said you could put it at the entrance to your home is when your home is right by Rishus HaRabim. But if your home is not by Rishus HaRabim, then you put it by the entrance to the courtyard. You'll notice that it comes out, according to Tosfos, that the requirement that everyone know it's your menorah isn't as severe as Rashi's requirement. Meaning, according to Rashi, the focus of the Gemara is not only do you have to put out a menorah, but everyone has to know that you're glorifying the miracle by putting the menorah near your door. Tosfos says that's nice when your door gives you that possibility. But if your door is inside a courtyard and only the people of the courtyard will see it, so then all the people of the courtyard light their menorahs outside the courtyard. Does anyone know which is yours, which is the neighbor's, who's glorifying the miracle? No. There's no way. How do they know? Everyone's putting it at the entrance of the courtyard. So here we have a distinction between Rashi and Tosus in the Gemara. What is the idea of Pilsume Nisa here? What did the Gemara talk about? Did you guys catch that? Yeah? Should I go through it again or we'll move forward? Okay.
It has to be the individual is making the glorification of the nest, or whether it has to be like shach to a certain person, it's enough that it's there.
Tosus also agrees it's a good idea when your house is open to public domain,
right.
Then Tosus also agrees you should put it at the entrance to your house. But Tosus says, in the average situation, you can't do that. According to Tosfos, the Braisa is talking about a very unique situation, because the classical case, everyone agrees, the classical home was not open to Rishus HaRabim. The classical home was open to the courtyard.
Right. So that's a machloket, whether it has to be clear that it's shach to a certain person?
I'm not saying that's a machloket. I'm saying that's an outgrowth of the machloket.
Okay.
To say that that's what's at the root of the machloket in Rashi and Tosfos, I'm not sure.
The problem is, you have to know who the menorah belongs to.
According to Rashi, you definitely have to know.
Yeah.
But
according to Tosus, it seems less imperative.
This might be a dumb question, but if you have a courtyard, in, let's say in Washington Heights, you know, you're coming into 44 Bennett, you know that building?
I don't know.
All right, one of the buildings.
I actually know.
One of the buildings over there. You come in, and then there's apartments all around. You know,
right.
You're talking about 100 different families, so that is technically, it's just a yuchid, and it's like private property, but if you lighten one of those windows, it's not good enough because it's not going to Rishus or Rabin?
Oh, it's a good question. What would Rashi hold about that? Meaning, at what number do we say that your courtyard is enough? Good question. It's a good question.
I mean, shouldn't even two other families be enough?
So we hold today that even your own family members is enough. That's why I told you when you fly to New York tomorrow, you're not flying on Hanukkah then, so it's not a problem. But had you been flying, so I told you, the best is your father should be motzi. But you could also light when you get home. If you get home, let's say, 2, 3 in the morning, which was the original plan.
Probably so then, be that way.
So if it's Hanukkah and you haven't yet lit that night, so being that your parents are probably going to get up to see you, so you light Hanukkah candles right away, and then they'll see it during the first 20 minutes that they're telling you, hi, how are you, welcome home, your bed is here, and blah, blah, blah. And then you've done Pirsum HaNisa. So we hold today that being that it's been almost a millennium that we haven't been lighting our Hanukkah candles outside, we've only been lighting them inside because when we lived in Europe and all the different places where we lived, so if we'd light our Hanukkah candles outside, that at best they'd destroy them, at worst they'd use them to torch the homes. So they could never light their Hanukkah candles outside. They always lit them inside. So today already the custom is we light them inside, and our primary Pirsumei Nisa is for the people inside the house. But that's not what the Gemara is talking about.
Now people torch their own homes by lighting it inside.
Yes, firemen, yes. Okay, my Hanukkah. The Gemara asks an interesting question. What is Hanukkah? Oh, good question. What is Hanukkah? So what's the question? We've been discussing Hanukkah.
You told us already.
Oh, the Tanu Rabbanan, because the rabbis learned Bechafei B'Kislev, the 25th of the month of Kislev.
I heard something interesting about, I think it was from you, my Hanukkah, what is Hanukkah? The Tanu Rabbanan, that the Rabbanan learned. And that's what the whole Hanukkah is about, learning.
Okay, the Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbi is learned in a braisa. We said Tanu Rabbanan is always a braisa from Rav Oshi or Rav Chia. It's a braisa that the academies had validated was a good quote. Bechafei Bechislev, 25 in the month of Kislev, Yomei de Chanukah are the days of Chanukah. Timnaya Inun, they are 8. Tilo lemispit behun, that we do not eulogize in these days. And we didn't get to discuss, but there was an institution of Megillat Tanit. In the time of the Second Temple, there were constant tragedies and constant miracles to save them from tragedies. And when they had these miracles, they'd institute a holiday. Ah, we had a miracle, we have a holiday to celebrate that we were saved from the miracle. So they had so many holidays that they composed a Tanaic work called Megillat Tanit, which we still have today. Mm-hmm. And in that, they said, on this day, we celebrate by not fasting. You would never fast on this day because that's how we celebrate. On this day, even if someone had a levaya, we don't eulogize them. So these are indicators of the level of celebration. So this is a quote from Megillat Tanit, that on Hanukkah you have 8 days where the level of celebration is that you don't eulogize the Lolita Noten, and you don't fast on these days. Even if a person had a bad dream, or if the sages had to institute a fast because of a drought, these are 8 days when you don't fast and you don't eulogize. Yeah?
So Hanukkah starts on Chafei Kislev, and that means it has a set date and a date. Something? I don't know.
No, it doesn't, because it depends on if Kislev is Male or Chaser. Kislev could be 30 days or it could be 29 days, so you never know when it's going to end.
Okay, that was my question. Like, what would they do about the agent for Rosh Hashanah? Would they need testimony from them, or could they just go by
Chanukah? No. They need testimony. Okay, so on the 25th of Kislev are the days of Chanukah, 8 days that we don't eulogize and don't fast in them. She, we're in the first wide line. She kishenichnesu yevanim naichal, that when the Greeks entered the temple, Timeu kol hashemanim shebaichal, they defiled all the oils that were in the temple. וכשגברם מלכות בית חשמונאי וניצחום, and when the kingdom of the Hasmonean home overcame them and won them, בדקו, they checked. ולא מצאו אלא פח אחד של שמן. They couldn't find other than one earthenware vessel of oil. שהיה מונח, that was placed, בחותמו של כהן גדול with the seal of the high priest. ולא היה בו אלא להדליק יום אחד, and there wasn't oil in that earthenware vessel other than to light one day. נעשה בו נס, a miracle happened with that flask of oil, והדליקו ממנו שמונה ימים, and they lit from that earthenware vessel 8 days. לשנה אחרת, a different year, קבעום, they set these days, ועשאום ימים טובים, and they made them into holidays, בהלל, with praise, והודאה, and thanks. So, what was the question, and what was the answer? The question was, what is Hanukkah? Rashi says the question is, for which miracle did they institute this holiday? And the answer is, when they overcame the Greeks and didn't have pure oil, then a miracle happened, and they had the oil lasted for 8 days. So for which miracle did they institute Hanukkah? For the miracle of the oil. What other miracles were there? So over here it doesn't say, but we say in the davening that the mere fact that we won the war was a miracle, because we were outnumbered, overpowered, undertrained. They were Rishayim, we were Tzadikim. All the cards were stacked against us. They should have won the war, going by the laws of nature. And we won the war. So that's another miracle that happened. But the institution of Hanukkah wasn't for that. The institution of Hanukkah was for what? For which miracle did they institute it? For the miracle of the oil. And we learned in the Nativot Shalom an expansion of why was this a reason to institute it more than that. Okay. I suggest... Now, maybe we switch over a little bit to halachot. So we could continue with the Gemara. What do you guys want? We have 10 more minutes.
Let's do some halacha because the next piece is pretty big. Really big.
Whatever you guys want. What's the vote?
I'm always down for halacha.
Okay.